This meeting is now being recorded.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Subteam Track 1 Overall Process Support Outreach Issue Call held on the 17th of October, 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Adobe Connect room. If you're only on the audio bridge, could you please let yourself be known now? Thank you. Hearing no names, I would like to remind all participants to please state your names before speaking for recording purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. Thank you. And with this, I'll turn it back over to Sarah Bakke.
Thank you. And this is Sarah Bakke for the record. Thank you all for joining us today, and again, apologize for the delay in getting started. Today's discussion is going to be on variable and fixed costs and the clarity of the application process. We're just going to be going through some of the information that we have received to date and see if we can start drilling down on that information and try to see if we can start working towards some decisions based off that information. Before we get started, I want to pause and see if anyone has an update to their SOI. If you do, please raise your hand or make a note in the chat. Okay, I'm not seeing any hands, no discussion in the chat. Also, does anyone have any other business that they would like to bring up either prior to our discussion or at the end of the meeting? Okay, not seeing any hands. I will assume that everyone's good. Should anything come up during the call, please feel free to put it in the chat or raise your hand and let us know. It appears that Krista has joined us. And so I will go ahead and turn this over to her if she is ready to begin. Krista, are you there?
Hi, Sarah. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Awesome. Sorry about that. So today we're talking about variable fees, and just like the prior time when we were talking about other application fees, we have one slide on that just to kind of give us a background on kind of the same methodology that was used. But not only that, there's a bit of an overlap, so I thought it would be good reference material for taking this conversation a little bit further on variable fees. So to start up, the slide number 4 is kind of the question, which was the rationale for the policy development, and that the application fee is likely to be driven by any changes to the program and remain dependent upon the principle of cost recovery as opposed to generating excess revenues. And so far we've kind of veered a little bit off of that sometimes instead of not or beyond cost recovery. So we've talked about some profits and where that would also go in the pricing. And it goes further on, we say, as recommendation in the implementation guideline B, and in addition, the existing language in implementation guideline B supports the concepts of differing application fee amounts for different applicants. The creation of application types should result in the requirement to perform a new costing analysis exercise based on changes that have been recommended for implementation. The derivation of the fee amounts may be driven by changes to the program, and as such, policy development was not anticipated by the DG through the possible PDP working group may reach a different conclusion. Notably, subjects such as applicant support program do not currently operate under the principle of cost recovery like the rest of the program and may require policy development. So we see right underneath that some of the costs that made up the $185,000 fee from the last time, and it was there just meant as a quick reference material as we kind of go through on the discussion. On slide number 5, and this will build up over time, but we're talking about the variable fees, and there's kind of two different methods or thought processes that we've had to date. And one of them is it's one fee fits all, or one is kind of a user pay system, where we were talking about different applicants may have different costs because of their usage in the system. And so I kind of titled it user pays to kind of reflect the usage of, say, the process parts in there. And we don't have all of the different parts, but just as a starting point on where we've kind of come from in our prior discussions and then moving forward. So on slide 6, we have the question, how does public policy change from break-even to, say, cost-plus impact our decisions on variable fees? So we have the impact of user pays and one-fee-fits-all approaches, if any, if we're still on that, agree that that's something worth discussing. And then we have, if it's cost-plus, do we want to suggest a percentage of what the working group thinks is acceptable? Additionally, if it is cost-plus, is it a same percentage or it would be maybe a different percentage based on the type of application? For instance, we had a closed, say, trademark versus an open applicant that may require, might be at a higher risk level and associated fees to do the processing of it. And there's the impact on risk analysis. I'll stop here to have, if anyone has any questions or comments so far, or maybe I'll just go a couple more steps further in case it might trigger some discussion. Don't see any comments, so I'll just continue a little bit further here. So building out the one fee fits all or the user pays, we had discussions on the difference in costs. So for instance, is it greater than 10%? Then we could say maybe we should justify the different types or application fees are justified. And perhaps, if it's less than 10%, then it doesn't warrant different application fees, fee amounts. And then we also had the financial support. And so I see the financial support as being different from the applicant support program. And there were some discussions on whether it's, a community application that really can't afford or doesn't have the same financial background as opposed to another type of application that doesn't need that financial support but is to the benefit of the community. So those were our thoughts to date, and I was trying to capture all of those thoughts and put it here as a way that we can discuss it going forward. The questions, if we go to slide 8, was one fee fits all. So there's a system, and there's a difference in cost only by the type of application if it's greater than 10%. And I'm only choosing 10% because in the prior discussions, that was the only number that came up. So I guess the first question is 10% a reasonable number to say that's our trigger point to say we should have a different application fee amount if it's greater than amount? And so I'll stop here. And I see Jonathan says, regardless of cost recovery or cost plus basis, it is established at this point as to whether this is on a per round or across the program as a whole. We didn't really have a discussion on, the implications of that, whether it was a one-time or not, except we did kind of do on what would, how would those costs be considered, i.e. if there's an investment in assets or computer systems, how would they be allocated on a one-time or a continuous basis versus a continuous, open windows for it. So that's kind of where we are so far. And we could actually maybe work on the methodology on how we allocate those assets going forward, and that might be something we can discuss further. Vanda says, I believe on one fits all costs, and so my survey in the developing region, cost was not the issue. Okay. So if it was, and I'm just asking this question, is if it was 20% different, would we perhaps say the same thing? Or if it was 30% different, would we say the same thing? And Alan, I see you have your hand raised, so please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. It's Alan Greenberg speaking. I thought the issue on whether it's a single cost or variable cost was an issue of fairness, not can people afford it. But if there is a significant difference between the highest application and the lowest application based on the hoops they have to jump through, then perhaps we should charge a differential rate, either have different rates or a cost plus, for different functions. But I thought it was a fairness issue, not an affordability issue. Maybe I misunderstood, though.
It's Crystal for the record. Thanks, Helen. You are correct. It was more of a fairness discussion as opposed to affordability, and I think in our prior discussions we were kind of expecting that the cost would go down, and that's how the whole cost-plus issue arose, on whether or not a cost would be too low, and therefore we would risk the security and the stability and people who are not serious about owning a TLD and the responsibility that was associated with it, as opposed to having it too low and they just take it too lightly. So I think that's where the whole cost plus actually came into it, and the ceilings and the floors, which we'll raise in another minute here as well.
Yeah, that's a new hand.
Go ahead.
Yeah. I really have a problem merging what happens if the cost is too low and every Tom, Dick, and Harry who doesn't know how to run a TLD will get into the queue. Issues that reflect, that impact stability or security of the Internet, I think we have to deal with separately. I don't know necessarily what hoops people have to jump through to make sure we don't get in that situation. And I personally think a very low price would be a bad thing. I don't think we need another 100,000 TLDs, and that is the potential if the cost goes down too low. That's a philosophical position that not everyone agrees with. But I'm not sure. If our concept of cost recovery and fairness leads us to a situation where we think there are stability issues, we have to rethink this carefully. Because we're getting into a different area than setting costs based on a cost recovery principle. And we've heard earlier in these calls that there are people who said we should stick with the 185,000. It wasn't a real impediment to most people, and we don't want to make it too easy. I can easily support that, but it violates the cost recovery, and we have to decide which road we're going down. So I'm not sure we have made that decision. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. I think Jeff, I saw your hand raised, so please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Krista. This is Jeff Newman. One other point I wanted to just bring up is something that I've heard from Akram on a couple different occasions. Sorry, I'm hearing an echo. Akram has said that as a policy matter, he wanted us to consider whether we wanted ICANN itself to act as a registry of top-level domains. And in his view, we needed to discuss if the price was too low that, we could be setting up ICANN as its own registry of sorts, with a lot of entries in there, and that was not something that he believed was, from a policy matter, discussed enough. Now, I had responded to him in my personal capacity, had said that I didn't consider that to be a huge issue because, unlike other registries, there's the connectivity is not provided by ICANN as an organization, but rather by IANA, and that the stability concerns were addressed by the root zone study. And so saying that ICANN itself is a, quote, registry is a little bit of a misnomer in the sense that they're not really performing any function that stands in the path of a registration or resolution. But the only entity that does is actually IANA and the root zone. But anyway, I thought that that's something we need to discuss. And on Alan's point of, you know, stability concerns, we do have questions out to the ESAC, to the Office of the Chief Technology Officer, and others to get input on delegations and how many TLDs would, if there is a number, would threaten the security stability of the system. So I'm not so concerned about that. I do believe that we've gotten enough feedback that the 180, that cost recovery was the right way to go, but that we guessed essentially on the cost, on what the cost would be, applying a third of the fee towards a contingency fund, a third towards technical evaluation, and a third towards historical costs. We now have some better data on the actual costs, and so you know, we hopefully can make a better, or have ICANN make a better assessment as to what would be cost recovery, but then need to make a policy decision, as you were hinting at, which is, should we set a floor just in case, you know, we don't want speculators and others in there. We want these TLDs to actually be used. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. Jonathan, I think you had your hand raised.
Can you confirm you can hear me okay?
Yeah, it's a little soft, but pretty good.
All right. Just interrupt me if it's not clear or you need more volume.
Will do.
I think I have a couple. Just, I guess I'll listen to points made by Alan and to some extent Jeff. I think on the cost recovery side, I mean, my understanding is that ICANN would argue that it's not yet established what the cost is, so we can't really speak to whether cost recovery, because they're clearly holding on to the excess application fees. They haven't decided that the cost is X, and therefore Y can be refunded to applicants or put into the reserve fund or dealt with otherwise. I mean, they're clearly saying at the moment we still have, we still haven't determined whether or not it's on a cost recovery basis. And then I guess the second point is, assuming you recognize or acknowledge that, you then come across the point of one which is in some way the point of fairness, is whether the cost should be spread across multiple rounds, whether or not that's through investment in technology and systems and processes in the third round, or whether indeed you approach each round as some way independently on a cost recovery basis. So, forgive me if these are already clearly answered or understood, but from the answers, from the discussion so far, I don't get the sense they are. So, I do think that the other point, which I don't have a view on yet, which is that concept of a flaw in the pricing and respectively, in theory, at least, the lower that flaw, the possibility there is of unlimited number of TLDs and all of the implications for security and stability that implies are interesting. But I don't have a view on that yet. Really, the question is in and around the cost establishment, whether that's spread across multiple rounds and whether indeed we do have figures to say what cost recovery actually is. Thanks.
Thanks, Jonathan. I think in the earlier discussions, it was, we were just more focused on the rounds going forward as, of course, the amount that is already built up and sitting there. I don't think that was part of our discussions or our focus. It's more just going forward on what would happen with that amount, and that's actually part of this discussion. And the floor and the cost, I'll let you develop your thoughts on that, and we'll get into that in a moment as well. But, Alan, I see you have your hand raised as well.
Thank you very much. Two things. First of all, on Jeff's comment that on commenting on Akram's comment on whether we are a registry of top-level domains, in fact, according to the terminology we're using, we are the registry, and IAN is the back-end provider. So I think we need to be a little bit careful. You know, we're the ones, as it were, selling the top-level domains. Someone else is doing the mechanical work. But I'm not sure it is really a benefit in trying to use those registry terms in regard to ICANN. The issue of too many domains is partly one of, do we want speculators in this business? And I think that's a conscious policy decision that we really need to make. The second part is whether compliance operations and that part of ICANN that makes it work, not whether the DNS works for 10,000 or 100,000 TLDs, but whether we can ensure that our policies are being followed and manage it reasonably, is something that I have a significant concern about. And, you know, we don't pay for compliance with the application fee. We do pay for it presumably with the ongoing annual fees. But some of these things don't ramp up linearly. And just having more money doesn't necessarily mean you can do the job properly. And I have a real concern on that area. Thank you.
Thanks, Helen. We'll, I guess, continue the conversation, and I know the speculation is a big part of that. So just to read a couple comments from the chat, and sorry, I'm at a conference and I'm having problems reading Cheryl's comment, but I did want to read it. I suspect the issue of affordability will vary across both regions and sectors. And Aubrey says, Alan, should one raise the cost to prevent applications? And then Phil has a comment saying, I think it would be more important to separate the variable cost to run the round and the fixed cost or the development cost that ICANN, the corporation, needs to implement or roll out in round two, i.e. a new computer system, new application system, et cetera. And Vanda mentions, agrees with Alan, it is our intention to speculate on GTLDs more than we had in I think it's 2012. Jeff, I see you have your hand raised. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Jeff Newman again. I just want to point out that, you know, we did have a couple rounds prior to this last one. And in those, the application fees were $50,000. And I didn't see a huge amount of speculation with the cost of $50,000. In fact, in the first round, I think there were, in 2000, there were 50 applications or applicants, of which 7 were selected. And in the second round, there were only 10 in 2005. Of course, that's because it was much more limited. But the point is that I don't think we should be using, you know, at the end of the day, our goal is to promote innovation and encourage competition. And I'm not sure that artificially keeping the price up at $185,000 simply because it, you know, that's when the existing ones paid for 2012 is the right thing to do. It's not, I don't believe, that's not in line with our encouraging, promoting competition and encouraging innovation. If there is an amount of TLDs that will threaten the security and stability of IANA and the Internet, we'll get that information back from the SAC and from others. If we do want to discourage speculation, there could be other ways from a policy matter we can do that than to keep the price so artificially high that we're not going to encourage anyone other than those that have a tremendous amount of money, or those that, donuts and others that feel like they can get a good amount of funding to run portfolios. Again, I just, that's not the way I think we should be thinking about these. So it's just, it's something that we need to stick within ICANN's line of, within their mission, their core values, and frankly, the policy that we set as the GNSO back in 2007. Thanks.
Thanks, Jeff. Jonathan, please go ahead.
Thanks, Chris. Two quick responses to Jeff's points. I think, in my view, I think there were other restrictions and constraints on the rounds prior to 2012, and I think I'm not sure it helps this discussion to bring those prior rounds in. There were significant differences there for various reasons. As to the second point on artificially high prices, I mean, certainly that's not my suggestion or point. All I'm asking is whether the cost recovery is spread across multiple rounds and making sure there's a sort of there's a fairness across any rounds, including 2012 and subsequent, and that somehow that there's something sensible across those rounds that creates a form of parity.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jeff, is that a new hand or old hand?
That's a new one.
Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Okay, thanks, Jonathan, for clarifying that. I just don't know how you spread out costs among different rounds when we're not really sure. You know, certainly we don't have any as to how many there are going to be in this current, quote, round. We have much less understanding what it's going to be like in the round after that and the round after that, assuming we go in rounds. So I'm not sure how we kind of develop that formula, but if there's a way to establish from ICANN kind of a steady state operation of, you know, how many applications or how many people it would take to run this operation in a continuous manner, and then, you know, every application after that is just a variable scaling cost. Perhaps we can do it that way, but that's going to be very difficult until we get to and understand what a steady state would look like. So, not sure how we do that, but certainly looking for ideas of how that could be accomplished.
Thanks, Jeff. Jonathan, please go ahead.
I don't think it's appropriate to just dominate. I mean, clearly, Jeff, and others, one logical way to do that would be to have a consistent price across the round and make the policy that I can then, after to be agreed time, redistributes any access back to the applicant. So you create a level playing field from the point of view of application fees, but don't ensure that ICANN necessarily holds on to the excess. Now, I'm not saying that's the only solution, but that is clearly has a form of logical consistency to it. Thanks.
Thank you. One of the ideas could be, you know, we just make a policy that say X percentage is we use cost, and then X percentage is kind of separated from the application fee, which can be pooled in order to pay for different systems or any kind of asset upgrades that we need to process the applications. And I think the other aspect of that, which kind of ties in, is if we do have that gap between the application fee and the floor, there's going to be that excess, and we have had discussions on what do we do with that excess, and that actually might feed into that to answer that question. And just going a little bit further on the slides, and if we look at slide 9, some of the prior discussions earlier were the concern over gaming the system. And we did kind of talk on that with, I guess, the fees and what people would consider a fee that was large enough that people wouldn't game the system. And some of the prior discussions were $100,000 is still a sufficient amount of money to help prevent that. And I'm not sure if we're still on that same page, or are we reverting and saying $185,000 is more the number to prevent that, or is it something else? Reading the chat, Aubrey says we can use an approximation. It can be adjusted, and that's based on what we've learned this round. And we can roll any surplus or deficit forward and rebudget and recost the next year. And Jeff says we could do that, but so long as there's much more scientific method to determine cost of the application process. And Cheryl's done a lot of typing here. I also suspect whilst we can look towards a history of previous rounds regarding predicting uptake for future ones, it's not a simple correlate. Yes, things are different between now and then, but we do not have any ideas on what a saturation point or steady state for opportunity uptake, nor do we hold predictable data relating to other non-purely DNS industry-related effects. We are in some ways trying to crystal ball gaze regarding price point, impact on speculation, uptake, and what you see in a crystal ball is very much biased by position and perspective. And Jonathan says, can the approximation be adjusted? ICANN seems to take the view that the excess application fees may still be required. It goes on. ICANN certainly does not seem to concede that $185,000 is too much. Trying to take it a little bit forward. I'm trying to think quickly here at the same time. So on the fees going forward, I don't hear, I guess, any contradiction that, say, 10% isn't a good or a bad number, but more so on trying to prevent issues going forward on speculation. So is there some kind of policy work that we could do to help prevent gaming the system, for instance? And or I guess the next question would be, is $185,000 the number that we're all somehow thinking, or are we thinking it's still cost plus, let's say, a little bit for the systems to be developed further, and then we can have a discussion on how we would develop that extra little bit to make sure that there's enough money for those systems to be developed. Jess says, can we repeat what the 10% number is? So the 10% number was a conversation that we had in prior meetings that if we, after that we do the full costing exercise and a brand is, let's say, and I'm, these are just numbers I'm pulling out of thin air, 80,000, and a generic open TLD was 85,000, we're going to say all application fees are 82,500, let's say. But, for instance, if a generic TLD, the actual cost for processing, et cetera, were 120,000, then we should actually have different costs for the different types of applications because it exceeds, say, 10%. So 10% was kind of like the line in the sand on why we should have different, we should have different costs by the different type of application. Does that make sense? Jeff, please go ahead.
Yeah, I think it would make sense if you assumed apples to apples, right? So that the, because the costs of, let's say, a generic application that goes through contention resolution is going to be a lot more processing costs than a generic application that just is the only application that goes through. So you kind of have to, in that 10% number, the cost can end up within a very big range depending on all of the items that the application has to go through. So you kind of have to have a stable base.
Thanks, Jeff. I think that was assumed, i.e. we were comparing apples to apples, but that was kind of the pretense I was working off of, but maybe I'm wrong. But let's say it is apples to apples. Is 10% an okay number, or do we want to change that number to something else as a way forward as to take the discussions going forward? Jeff says, I think that is a little low. So you would think it should be higher at 15 or 20%? And with that number, that's where we were okay justifying the different application fees for the different type of application. Anything else under that, we wouldn't be. Oh, I see you have your hand raised. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think, this is Jeff, I think 10% sounds very low, especially if you get to, like, you know, an $8,000, in your example, $8,000 difference. I think there may be a much greater differential between different types of applications, like, let's say, a community application versus a brand application. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't try to price them around the same amount. So using your example of 10%, you know, I would think that if it's within 20% or 25% even, that they still should be priced at around the same amount.
Okay. Just again for the record. So then the question would be, where do those excess funds go? Because now we're building up the surplus between our cost and the application fee. And if we go, I kind of address it in one of the slides later on, and we were having discussions. We've never actually came up with an idea on what do we do with those excess funds. And, you know, we could tie it back to the conversation on those excess funds could be used in for the systems and the development costs going forward. But if we have, and it also goes down into your breakdown on the different types of applications and those amounts being, I guess, pooled up and continually build up, but what do we do with the funds then? Silence. Jeff, go ahead, please.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's a tough question. So, you know, that's why ICANN's actually seeking kind of comment on how to build up their reserve fund and how much it should be. I mean, you could say that some of it would go to the reserve fund. Some of it should go, in theory, back to the applicants if we can figure out how to do that. But at the end of the day, we have no idea how much we'll end up with in excess at all. So, I mean, I think we can make recommendations, but, you know, at the end of the day, I don't think we're going to be able to definitively answer that or provide policy guidance on that until someone does the math and we actually see how much is out there. But we do need to make it much more definitive than what we currently have, which is basically a huge surplus fund that's out there, and ICANN basically is refusing to give any of that back or to cover forward costs. They're just basically holding on to it. So anyway, Jonathan's got his hand raised, so I'll back off. Thanks.
Thanks. Jonathan, please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. No need to back off, Jeff, but it does. I mean, I would have raised the point about the reserve fund, and as you were saying it struck me that there is something quite interesting here, because, of course, ICANN has now put out a consultation document. It'll be interesting to see how that runs, looking and essentially recommending currently that they get their reserve fund back to 12-month operating budget. But there is a hypothetical situation here where, say, reduce the fees, got massive of applications in for new TLDs, generated lots of work for ICANN in processing all those fees, and their revenues would suddenly shoot up. And ergo, the need for the reserve fund to go up because of the 12-month fees. So I think you've got to, you know, there's a part of me that thinks with all of this that we should limit the number of levers we pull at any one time, like a good sort of scientist or experiment. The experiment should, we shouldn't modify everything at once, and there is a risk that all the parts move and we can't judge it. But that certainly is an interesting factor, whether or not where any excess funds get applied to, and if that's, you know, quite what that reserve fund level should be. Thanks.
Thanks, Jonathan. I don't know, and I could be wrong. Do we have the maximum number of applications that we could process in a given time period? Or I don't think we've gotten the answer on that, but that could be something that we can use in that equation, perhaps going forward, because then it's just a breakout by the type of applications, and then it's a costing exercise. One of the other points that we've discussed before, and I'm just going to jump to slide 10 here for a moment, and it was a discussion on not having to do certain parts of it and the risks associated with that. So we were talking about the variable fees and then the complexity of the application. And, for instance, brands may not have to do the financial evaluation part of it, and we were discussing whether or not that was fair or not, and then the implications of that as well. So before, I think it was a discussion that they shouldn't have to pay, you know, there's a way to jump that because they are publicly traded, and they don't have a business plan for it because they're not going to earn revenue for it, and reduce the cost for that. Jeff, I see you have your hand. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Just to answer your question, the question on the number of applications that could be processed has not been answered yet. There's a letter out to the SAC, the RSAC, the Chief Technology Officer of ICANN, and to the GDD staff to get answers on whether the 1,000-name delegation rate would still apply given the study that was done by the on the root zone, and then also asks the question of GDD staff of, you know, with scaling, how much could they process? But I don't think we're going to get a definitive answer as to a definitive number to put into an equation. My guess is we're going to probably get back an answer like, we can do more than what we did, but we're not sure how much we can do, and we'll have to look out for signs of instability or something like that. I can't imagine them coming back saying a specific number. I'm not sure how definitive we'll get on that. But, you know, there is $128 million of unspent application fees right now, according to ICANN's own admission. So we know that there's a lot of excess fees that would be generated if it were $185,000 again. That much we know. Thanks.
Thanks, Josh. I would assume some of the instability could be probably reduced if we increase the fees as well, so there might be some other step-up process in there as well. Going back to, I guess, some of the other questions that we had before, it was we were talking about a user pay system and the gaming in the system and whether we want to perhaps address some of the sanctions for applying for a cheaper or faster application type. For instance, we were talking about somebody could apply for, say, a community application and then switch to another type of application. And then is there something that we want to perhaps develop in policy to prevent that? For instance, it's not just the same cost as changing the application type fee. For instance, if one type of application was, say, I think I used 85 or 80,000 before, and the second a generic was 85,000, going from a brand to a generic simply isn't the $5,000 difference. There could be some kind of sanction or some other fee in there that hopefully, you know, reduces that kind of gaming aspect to it. So I'm not sure if we want to consider that or discuss that further, or are we okay just assuming that people will just pay the difference in the type of application fee if they want to do a change later? And sorry, I'm just reading the chat at the same time, and Steve says, I think the question posed to SSEC, the RSSEC, and GDD was more about root zone scaling. I don't believe we've asked the operational questions yet, as there are quite a few variables. This working group would probably need to provide an order for them to do so. Okay. And Jonathan says that, Jeff, to your point, we still know 185,000 will generate significant access. To be clear, we do not know that 185,000 will generate significant access. We simply do not know what the number of applications will be at 185,000 or higher or lower. And Jeff says, I'm not sure. We are in agreement on what gaming of the process means. So sorry, I was in that sense, I was referring to a discussion we had earlier where, as I was saying, somebody applies for a brand TLD for $80,000, for instance, and then later changes it to a generic open TLD. And they do the branding application because it saves them the $5,000. Plus, it's not as heavily involved in the application processing requirements. So I'm getting feedback. Jeff, please go ahead.
Yeah, okay, now I got it, because gaming was used before to describe applying for a TLD as a speculative process. But in your example, yeah, if there are differences in the types and there's or they want to change it somehow, then absolutely paying the difference plus some sort of penalty fee or some sort of higher repositioning fee should be assessed in a way to discourage that type of thing and only encourage it in actual situations where they want to change it.
And it's Krista again. Would you have any suggestions on what that penalty would be or the setup of it? Or maybe I know we're coming up to the hour here, but perhaps that's something that we can open up the next discussion on. Aubrey says, gaming, any opportunistic use of policies in a way people frown upon. And then Vanda says, yeah, if there is a difference, then application should pay the difference if it changes the type. So unfortunately, I didn't, we kind of got a little bit sidetracked there on a few of the slides that are left in the terms of the variable fees. I know we'll probably discuss variable fees at ICANN in Abu Dhabi. So maybe we'll leave it there as kind of a food for thought to discuss there, and we'll circle back and hopefully make a little bit more progress on our thoughts going forward so we can create some, I guess, policy wording around it that kind of addresses everyone's concerns. Sarah, I don't know if you have any other things that you would like to add on this call.
Sorry, I was having a horrible time getting unmuted there. No, I don't have anything to add at this time.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank everyone for their time, and hopefully we can carry out this conversation and make some progress in Abu Dhabi. And in the meantime, safe travels, and we will see you there. Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Today's meeting is adjourned. Please disconnect our lines. Have a good rest of the day.